So first what I'm going to do today is I'm going to read from the Nectar of Devotion just because of the standard of realization of the person who wrote the book. So it's not just his words, but it's his conviction and faith. So I'm going to read a I'm going to have to bring the book because I have it on an iPad so you can. But I guess it's the second paragraph of chapter 2. In this connection, Srila Rupa Goswami suggests that the person eligible for Krishna consciousness or devotional service can be classified by his particular taste. He says that devotional service is a continual process from one's previous life. No one can take to devotional service unless he had some previous connection with it. For example, suppose in this life I practice devotional service to some extent. Even though it is not 100% perfectly performed, whatever I have done will not be lost. In my next life, from the very point where I stop in this life, I shall begin. In this way, there is always a continuity. But even if there is no continuity, if only by chance a person takes interest in pure devotional in a pure devotee's instructions, he can be accepted and could advance in devotional service. Anyway, for persons who have a natural taste for understanding books like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, devotional service is easier than for those who are simply accustomed to mental speculation and argumentative processes. The reason why I need a pen, because sometimes some thoughts come up that I should discuss. So I'm so happy to see that most of the people are coming regularly. In Sanskrit, there's a word called Shreyas and Prayas. Prayas is what you like immediately, and Shreyas is what you do for your ultimate benefit. So, especially if there's somehow or other in May, there's an incredible beach day. And somehow or other, I still see you here understanding that the ultimate benefit was better than your immediate benefit. So, and it's really interesting for me to prepare the class because I have to gauge how much I should put in a particular chapter for that amount of time. But if somehow, and it's never happened before, I finish early, then I also plan that, and I think we will have time sometimes to actually go into the Krishna stories and just extract the moods and feelings that we're actually discussing. And as I said, sometimes I just can't go over everything. Like maybe traditionally the way this course would be taught is in Vrindavan, where it's the spiritual world and no one works. If you ever been there? What a wonderful place, right? So if you have a class, everyone can come every day peacefully, sometimes twice a day. And you just give the same, you know, you'd go slowly and analyze. But this is another way. You have the books. People have liked that the books are there. They like that my notes are up. You have the video of the class. You also have the commentary I wrote and the Nectar of Devotion. So this is a guide to give you the framework to actually even study it more deeply. And one thing I like to do is go over things. Because the idea is not just to cover a certain amount. The idea is that actually you learn things. Yeah, we can shut the door. Yeah, come on in. Yeah, thank you. So it's nice to go over things. And maybe even every week, I may go over the core concepts because every book has a theme. I once took a writing course, and it was called, what is it, Straight Thinking, something like that. I took a writing course in Vrindavan by the Prabhupada's main editor, who to this day is editing, but edited all of Prabhupada's books. And one way that when you're writing, to see that you're, one very important thing is focus. And focus means every book is about one thing. And in fact, if someone gives a good class, it's because he's speaking about one thing. And then if he references it with an example, he may quote a verse, tell a story. But the dynamicism of what he presents is because there's a continuity. It makes everything dynamic. So you may say a simple thing, but it's connected to the main point. So really, the real objectives and themes of the book, I want to go over practically every class. Let's see. And Sahari told me that usually he doesn't like when people have reviews. But he said when we do reviews, we generally do it from a different angle. And you also can get further realization. So first, as you remember, in the Nectar of Devotion, I think what I'll do now, that's a little far back there, but I wanted it to be seen, but that's okay. Just so we get an idea where we are. And one time in this class, if we have time, I'm going to play a slide presentation of the author's poetry. Not just his poetry, but there's a book called Chitra Kavitwani, where there's something called a kavi. And a kavi means it's like a poet, but he's such a poet that maybe only two are found in 100 years. And they have such word craft. So they go through these 12 exercises. Just a side point that's interesting. They go through these 12 exercises where they have to make poems. So he has to make a poem of Krishna. So the first poem he makes is like a New York Times crossword puzzle, where it has to read the same forwards and backwards. It's amazing. And then all of a sudden you see that he did it diagonally too. And then if you go a circle, he actually wrote his signature in it. It's amazing. Or make a poem about Krishna using just one consonant. It's an incredible poem. It goes, it's all N's, you know. So it's like, it's very beautiful. So he, as you remember, instead of dividing the book into chapters, he made divisions. So we'll say this is Eastern Division, Southern Division, Western Division, Northern. The Eastern Division, which we actually finished, it's a very short division, is called, just for you that are, how many are studying Sanskrit with Vasudev? Okay, interesting. It's called Samanya Bhakti. It's just, Samanya means general. It's a general overview. We didn't finish. We did not finish the Eastern Division, excuse me. It's called Samanya Bhakti, and it had four waves. Right? I got it wrong. It's called the Eastern Division. It's not called Samanya Bhakti. The first wave is called Samanya Bhakti. And that's a general overview of devotional service. And we covered that because basically what it had was the introduction to the book. Then it had the definition of pure devotional service. And then it had the six characteristics of devotional service. So it gave a general overview of devotional service. So, and that in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the Nectar of Devotion, it was the introduction and the first chapter. So Prabhupada's division is according to chapters, because that's the way people read things in the contemporary world in which he was presenting it. So the first intro was Samanya Bhakti. So we covered that. And now this will be chapters 2 to 14 will be Sadhana Bhakti. Sadhana Bhakti means devotional service in practice. And then the third wave will be Bhava Bhakti. We're going to discuss that today, so it makes sense to you. But basically, devotional ecstasy. And that was in chapters, actually this goes 15, 16, this is to 16, yes. This is to chapter 16, this will be 17 and 18, and then the 19th chapter will be Prema Bhakti, devotional service and pure love of Godhead. So that's the basic, and then the southern division. This I'm going to discuss later on in one class. You'll find it very interesting what this rasa theory is. Rasa theory means how is perfect love composed, both in life and in literature. So we're going to discuss that too. Next time we'll have an eraser, but I don't think I need to erase it anyway. Okay, so I just want to show you where we're at. We're going to start the second chapter, Sadhana Bhakti. But I should mention something also. Prabhupada is not confined to these divisions exactly, because he puts something from the introduction, from Samanya Bhakti, a general overview, he put into the second chapter, the Sadhana Bhakti section. But that's a little, don't need to explain that right now. Okay, actually, while I'm standing, I feel comfortable. And so this is a review, just Akila Rasamrita Murti. You remember there were six verses that were the introductory verses, and the Mangalacharanam, invoking auspiciousness, it does three things. It states the objective of the book. It offers obeisances and prayers to the predecessor acharyas and teachers who are responsible for giving the person who's writing the book the knowledge, and it gives benedictions and blessings. So I just wanted to go over, it was the first verse and the first and just one term, Akila Rasamrita Murti. What is the objective of the book? The objective of the book is Krishna. And Krishna is, this is such a beautiful, Megan, you asked me if there's a lot of things that I quote. This is one of them. Akila Rasamrita Murti, such a beautiful description of divinity and the Krishna conception of divinity. Murti means the embodiment. Akila means complete. Rasamrita, amrita means nectar, and ras means of love and relationships. And that means the full manifestation, and this is an important point to understand in the bhakti conception, in this type of theology, that the full manifestation of being is relationship. Just, and Prabhupada gave a very clear example that we discussed before. A high court judge, he's sitting very high, he has a very high position, but very little of his person is manifest. But when he comes home, and he can be himself, so you can think of Krishna as God when God's himself. And when you're yourself, then your full being can be manifest, which is friendship, romantic feelings, parental feelings, mood of servitude. We're going to discuss this later, but there's basically five rasas. You can, shantaras means the love of appreciation, like a fan. They never serve, they just clap. So you can have that relationship with God. You could cheer God. And those are the tapasvis. It's all described here. And the gyanis. God is so imminent. He's so great that you can't think of service. What does he need? And then there's dasyaras, the mood of service. Then there's sakyaras, the mood of friendship. Vatsalyaras, parental feelings, and madhuyaras, conjugal feelings. So God is most full when he's Krishna. That's what Krishna means. And I copyrighted a phrase, but actually, in spiritual circles, plagiarism is actually encouraged. It's called Guru Parampara. You just say what your teacher says, that's all. You don't really have to copyright. You can use it anytime you want. But I made this phrase that, what does Krishna mean? Krishna means God, G-O-D, when his guard is down. G-U-A-R-D. It means the full, and you know, I feel I have to stop now because I can really, there's so much on this point about what really Krishna means. Therefore, even when, we'll get a little story here too. When Krishna went to, there's a famous story where there's a solar eclipse, and when you live in India, they consider that the eclipses are very inauspicious. We don't do it here, but if there's a solar eclipse, and you get caught up in it, if there's a solar eclipse, they don't even open the temple. The temple is closed. No one will cook. And you stay in the room in abject paranoia with the with the blinds closed, that if any like rays get on you. And what you do, and I've done this, you go to a holy river and you stay in the holy river in the whole eclipse. And I've sat in the holy river to counteract the impurifications. It's really a big thing. It's amazing. And then afterwards, you have to wash. If any clothes were even clean, were left out drying, you have to wash them again. It's so inauspicious. So Krishna went to Kurukshetra. Who knows the first verse of Bhagavad Gita? Kastuba. Yeah, what did my sons and the sons of Pandu do? Being at Kurukshetra, which is Dharmakshetra, which is a religious place. And just to give you, because I know it's interesting, a little view of India, I went to Kurukshetra where the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. But the reason at Kurukshetra is this place called Brahma Sarovara. It's one of the most beautiful lakes in the world with this white sandstone coming in for bathing, and it's very, very pure. So Krishna went to, from Dwarka, he had already left Vrindavan, he went to Kurukshetra for the, for the solar eclipse. And the residents of Vrindavan went. And then Radha saw Krishna after 96 years, but they didn't age. After 96 years, and it's so famous, and when she saw Krishna, she was in so much separation from Krishna, even though she saw Krishna, because it really is not Krishna. Why? Because when Krishna goes out of Vrindavan, he becomes a king. And when you're a king, what happens? You wear the kingly outfit and you're followed by subjects. And therefore, you can't let your guard down. You can't express your intimate feelings. So she was in complete separation from Krishna. It was the most intense separation. It was called separation in union. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who is the father and guru of Prabhupada's guru, they asked him if there was any place in the world that you could retire and do your bhajan. Even Prabhupada wrote in his books, at the end of life, we should stop and do nirjan bhajan. Nirjan means without any people, we should practice our Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, please, my disciples, take over the management. I want to do nirjan bhajan. See, they asked Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if you can do, when you do your bhajan, is there any place you would like to do it? He said, Kurukshetra. And people saying, Kurukshetra? That's like the Bhagavad Gita. Not Vrindavan? Or Mayapur? Or Puri, there's deep separation. They say, why? He said, because I am Radhika Dasyam. I am the servant of Radha, and that was her greatest moment of need. Why? What was the need? Because she was with Krishna, but it wasn't Krishna. Because Krishna means Akila Rasamrita Murti. It means when God can be himself, when the full manifestation of his being is manifest. But he couldn't. He was a king, and there had to be formality. And a bit distant. And he had to keep up his guard. So this is our in this tradition, this is the fullest conception of divinity. When being can exchange love fully. See, you may see a person in the distance, but they're a stranger. How much of them you know? You can study them. You can analyze them. You can read about them. But you don't know anybody until you love them. Because when you love them, then rasa. Then their friendship comes out. Their romantic feelings come out, depending on the relationship. So it's a very, very esoteric conception of the divinity. But it's also very, very satisfying. Akila Rasamrita, the complete nectar of relationships, the embodiment of that. And that's the objective of the book. Because what we're mostly going to be studying... Did I lose that? Does someone can point out where that is?
It's right
back here. Oh, it's okay. Because we're going to be studying the book, and we're mostly going to cover this, but really, this is the practice to understand your relationship with Krishna. So what the southern division does, and it has five waves, it describes what are the components of perfect friendship. Perfect servitorship, the emotional components. What are the actions of friendship perfectly? What are the emotions of friendship? So anyway, there's five bhavas, five emotional experiences. It's fascinating. I'll show it to you practically later on. And then the Western division describes Shantaras, Dasyaras, Sakyaras, friendship, Vatsalyaras, parental, and Madhuryaras, conjugal. And it shows what are the different bhavas of each relationship. But anyway, we're back to the introduction. Akila Rasamrita Murti. Krishna. It's not that there are many gods, but just like any being has different manifestations. It's not like Narayan or Ram is different from Krishna. It's the same person. But what Krishna means, ete chamsa kala pumsa krishnastu bhagavan swayam. Swayam means the original, but it also means the fullest manifestation. God at home, full manifestation of all love. And Narayan means God as the creator. He's the high court judge. You don't see much of the inner self, okay? And then next we had Anyabhilashita Shunyam. So this was the definition of pure devotional service. And this is the theme. You remember I was talking about themes. So let me get back to that. I got lost there a bit, but I took this course. And in this course, they told us how to write an article that's focused. Because when you write something, you write so many beautiful things, and you become attached to each little thing that you write, even if they don't fit into the book. And I remember I had this one person, he was like a brilliant spiritualist. He wasn't such a great writer, but he had a lot of knowledge, and he would write, and then he had to be edited. And they had to bring three or four heavy people in there. Not as the editors, to support the editors. And one person said, who is there, and he's actually going to come here, and I'll recommend that you'll see him. He'll come on June 7th. His name is Giriraj Swami. He's one of the most senior disciples of Prabhupada and probably has a greater memory of the life of Prabhupada than anybody I've ever met. And he told him, you have to get rid of your darlings. D-A-R-L-I-N-G-S. Your darlings. You're so attached to every little sweet word. But when you write, so when I took this writing course, what they did is, the way you find focus, you go over every paragraph, and you have to say, so what? And then you have to answer, so what? And then you have to answer in relationship to the theme. Everything has to support your theme. Every book has a theme. It means one thing, which everything else is connected. So it's amazing, because it says, so what? And then you wrote something that you're so attached to and so beautiful, but you can't say, well, so what? And relate it to your theme. So this is the theme. Everything in this book is going to be related to this. And what is it? It's pure devotional service. So that's called Uttama Bhakti. And remember, I just want to go over because it's so important. And then briefly. But there's the basic component of the definition. So it's pure devotional service. So this is the basic component called Sarup Lakshanam. Lakshana means symptoms. Sarup means the basis, the core. And then this is the modifying or Tatastha Lakshanam. So this describes pure devotional service. And this modifies it even further so that there's no good definitions. They're neither too inclusive or exclusive. Like let's say can you give a definition of a devotee? And I say, well, a devotee is one who wears robes and shaves their head. You know, a devotee is one, so it's too inclusive. And it can't be too exclusive. What is a devotee? Well, anyone who says om. that's too broad. So the brilliance of Rupa Goswami in everything in devotional service, everything, he's given a perfect definition, which is not too inclusive or not too exclusive. So it's a perfect definition. So he says, bhakti is activities towards Krishna, But that's too inclusive, because there's activities towards Krishna that are not devotion. Like you read sometimes in Krishna's story that there is demons that they're concentrated on Krishna, but it's not devotion. So therefore he writes, anukulyena, it's favorable activities. So that's the core definition, that your mind, body, and words for Krishna, anukulyena, and they're intended to please Krishna. So it brings it right to the heart. It's right to the heart. You're doing things with your mind, your body, and words, but there's an intention to please Krishna. And you're connected with that intention through the lineage of teachers and pure souls who understand God and understand the sacred teachings that describe the will of that absolute reality. That's anushilanam. But this modifies it even more. Because this could be too now inclusive. Because what if your one party in your family dies? Now, if you go to the function to satisfy your family, does that take you out of the realm of Uttama Bhakti? So he gives the definition, jnana karma adhyana. It's not covered by jnana or karma. There are things that we have to do in the world that are not directly an intention to please, you know, for God directly. They're social obligations. But if we don't do them, it's a disturbance in the world. And Lord Chaitanya even performed this particular ritual when his father died that was karma. Now, it's not that you shouldn't have, when someone in the family dies, according to the bhakti tradition, you don't have to do very elaborate rituals. You just offer prasadam to the deities, then you feed all the then you offer it to that person who's passed away, and then you feed all the Vaishnavas. But Lord Chaitanya did an elaborate ritual. But it doesn't cover bhakti, because if he didn't do that ritual, it would be such a disturbance. So you see, if you just say activities that are favorable to Krishna is uttama bhakti, then you would exclude people that have to sometimes do some ritual that's necessary or something. So that's how the definition works. Anyabhilashita shunyam, and without any motive. See, because your intention is to please Krishna, but it may be mixed with other things, then it's not uttama bhakti. Uttama bhakti is when there's zero other motives. Now, let me ask you a question. When you did the kirtan today, how much did you touch this? How much was in your heart in this feeling for Krishna with the intention to please? Let me ask you another question. Don't name anyone who is a guru. Okay? Besides that, think of a person who you think exemplifies this. Kasturba. And besides Kasturba. Besides Kasturba, okay? Anybody like to share? Kadamba. Mother Kalina, yes, there's a very saintly lady who's my next door neighbor upstate. And she has it's so beautiful to see, isn't it? She always thinks of others before herself. Amazing, actually. She even had an interesting story. You know, in the beginning of the Hare Krishna movement, One person made a commentary on it, that the problem was, is that Prabhupada was the only adult. So you had this whole society and no one was over like 28 or 30. But they were sincere. They were sincere. So this lady, her husband, renounced the world. In that, amazing. And, you know, for her whole life, she just gave full blessings. It's amazing. She's so saintly. I hope you it's the bhakti immersion. Hopefully, if any of you come, she'll come. She's so humble. Wonderful. Anybody else like to suggest someone that you've seen? Bryn?
The first person that popped in my head was Vishwambar.
Yeah, just the kirtan and just for Krishna. Amazing. You know, the first time I saw Vishwambar, did I tell you the story? I was in this building. It's that Gurukul building, and I was on top floor, and I hear this kirtan, and I see I have long introductions, and then I'll get to everything. I think it's important. This kirtan, and I see, because his father would lead for 20 years, his father would lead what's called Brajmandal Prikram, where he'd take a group walking and camping around Brajmandal for 30 days. They would walk 20 kilometers every day and sleep in schoolhouses and different things. He would go. So I see this huge kirtan coming in, and then I look down and there's someone 4 years old leading the kirtan. So yeah, he's a special soul. Anybody else? Who?
Bud.
Yeah. Right? He's really fixed, right? He just wants to please his guru and the Vaishnavas. Yeah, so it yeah.
You see it.
Yeah. Thank you. And isn't it just nice just hearing about these people and thinking about them? You wanted to add something?
Yeah, I was going to say
Jai. Jai too. Okay. Now, what the reason why I do this, because when we philosophize certain concepts, right, like surrender and humility and, from our as Satya Hari said, you know, words are pregnant with history. We sometimes have negative concepts. So you need to actually see the concepts embodied in people. And then you could say yes. And that means what? They have the intention to please something higher than their own whims. Their life is not focused on me, 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 me. And I'd have to say everything, the people you mentioned, Anu, Shilanam, and they're actually connected to Krishna's desire by those who represent it too. They all have Guru Nishta. They have faith in their teachers and they want to follow their teachers. And that's what makes their life pure. Very nice, good. Okay, let's go on. We're just like in the review part. Kishori, you missed your exit. It's okay. You came from New Jersey. You can come up and sit someplace. That's okay. Anyone who comes to the class with four children, they have an excuse if they're late. You know, you can sit on a chair or whatever you're comfortable. Okay? No, but I just appreciate that you made it. What's that? Okay. Well, okay, the six characteristics. We'll do this really quickly because we definitely want to get to the next part. But even if I don't get to the next part, I cover in the next class anyway, right? So then when you're at that platform of Uttama Bhakti, and Uttama Bhakti doesn't mean that there's no other desires in your heart. It means you're just not acting on that platform. You're acting on the platform of Guru and Krishna. as you mentioned, those different people. And when that happens, there are certain symptoms that begin to manifest. And Kleshagni is relief from material distress. And who can remember the three main causes of material distress? That's a more elaborate description.
Avidya.
Avidya.
Ignorance.
Ignorance.
And that leads to a simple proclivity.
Right.
Which leads to the simple action.
Right.
I just don't remember this answer.
It's papam. Sinful reactions lead to distress. That's a result of sinful activities. When you don't act on the platform of Dharma, and when you act selfishly, the world is so constructed to create conditions for your life that teach you lessons to bring you to a higher platform of purity. So you get reactions, sinful reactions. Then bijam is sinful desires. And avidya, the root cause, is ignorance. So you can read, but we had many, many descriptions how when you come to devotional service, really, sadhana bhakti, when you're actually fixed on that platform, this starts to happen. You start to become free from sinful reactions. It's all in the book. So, when I'm actually speaking to people, I'm actually saying, actually, it's working. I'm not giving tests, but people on themselves are actually reading the materials and reading the books. Shubhada means brings auspiciousness. There were four symptoms of auspiciousness.
It's good for everyone.
Okay.
Attracts everyone.
It can attract everyone.
It produces same qualities.
All good qualities. Can benefit everyone. And it gives a real special type of happiness that's superior to material enjoyment, mystic perfections, and personal liberation. This real happiness is love. And when you actually have love in your heart, when you actually have bhakti in your heart, then that's real happiness. But basically, there were four. You can benefit everyone just by the nature of your consciousness, whoever you come in contact with, gets a drop of that love. And therefore, you attract everyone because the most attractive quality is compassion and mercy. And if that's in your heart, that's more attractive to anybody than anything else. And so you can benefit everyone, you can attract everyone. You develop all good qualities because you're acting from that platform of not yourself, but of what is right and what is love and what is Dharma. So you can actually help that's the root of good qualities. What is that verse, Megan? Translation.
All the demigods and their exalted qualities, such as religion, knowledge, and renunciation, become manifest in the body of one who has developed unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. On the other hand, a person who is devoid of devotional service and engaged in material activities has no good qualities. Even if he has perfected the practice of mystic yoga or the honest endeavor of maintaining his family and relatives, he must be driven by his own mental speculations and such a person, how can any good quality be found?
Okay, good. It's good, right? It's authoritative. I'll go quickly now. Moksha lagudakrit, it's Lagudakrit, it makes liberation very small. Liberation, it says, follows bhakti. It follow, moksha, liberation follows bhakti like a maidservant. And actually, liberation and devotion is something else. I'll give the Sanskrit. It's very muktir hitva yata rupam sarupena vivastita. What liberation is and devotion is, muktir hitva, mukti hitva, you give up yata rupam, the false forms, the false conception of the self, sarupena vivastita. And you become situated in your swarup. Liberation means to become who you actually are. What is that? The perfectional, Prabhupada says in one purport, the perfectional state of living entity is called a devotee. It means a lover of God in the heart, really understanding and really feeling it. And Sudurlabha, rarely achieved, and it's rarely achieved because you can't get it by anything else by bhakti and real bhakti. Your practices have to come, and it does. It's a gradual process. When you really get bhakti, and when it's talking about bhakti here, it's talking about a special bhakti. It's talking about bhava bhakti. And what bhava bhakti is when the natural propensity to serve God becomes so intensified in the heart that there's no other voice in one's consciousness but that mood of service and love, then God infuses the heart with his own bhakti shakti, the essence of his bliss potency, which is bhakti. And we'll discuss that in bhava. But it's rarely achieved. It can be achieved, but you have to practice, and you have to practice with love, and also because it can control Krishna. Love controls God. If love didn't control God, then what would we call God? What do you call someone who can't be controlled by love? Where you give your heart, you give them, you surrender, you give your life, and they're not controlled. Is that an attractive quality?
No.
That's called impersonal.
No.
Everyone's laughing like out of realization. Like it's called impersonal. God is not impersonal. And when you're personal, you're controlled by love. God is controlled by love. So he rarely gives it. Sandandana visheshatma, it's condensed bliss. And it's described, if you take material pleasure, it can't equal a drop of the pleasure of actually becoming liberated from this world. And I know in the Yoga Sutras, when the meditation gets very, very deep and you go beyond the objects and beyond the elements, and you just see the core element that everything is prakriti, it's described that there's an indescribable bliss of that type of liberation. But they say when you multiply that by a trillion fold, it doesn't equal a drop of the existential love potency of God that enters one's heart. If there is a divine absolute reality, then what is his love like? And what is the pleasure of that love if it enters one's heart? And Sri Krishna Karshani, it attracts even Krishna. And what's going to be described is, we'll go to the next. Now I think I'm going to sit down and we're going to go and go to the next chapter. And so the three categories, devotional service, which Rupa Goswami describes in Bhakti, are listed as devotional service in practice, devotional service in ecstasy, and devotional service in pure love of Godhead. devotional service in practice, sadhana bhakti, devotional service in ecstasy, and pure love of Godhead. And in those six characteristics, the first two manifest when you're practicing pure devotional service at the level of sadhana bhakti. Then the next two, or all four, at bhava bhakti, and all six at prema bhakti. So Prabhupada discusses this at the beginning. Now, this chapter will be devotional service in practice. Okay? Now, Rati, we can go to the next one. Now, what's going to happen here is Prabhupada's going to discuss what is the eligibility for devotional service. But the interesting thing is this kind of section, what I just read about the eligibility and the taste, etc., was actually the last subject in Samanya Bhakti, which is a general... Actually, I got it wrong. I'll just explain again. Okay. Samanya Bhakti means a general description of the Eastern Wave is Samanya Bhakti, a general description of devotional service. No. Okay. It is Samanya Bhakti. The Eastern Division, is varieties of devotional service. The first, the introduction in the first wave, which is the introduction to the first chapter, is Samanya Bhakti, a general description of devotional service. Then the second wave, beginning in chapter 2, is sadhana bhakti. What Prabhupada does, and I is this section, a little bit about the eligibility and the taste, was actually the last section of Samanya Bhakti, of the general overview of devotional service. But somehow or other, Prabhupada, for communication and who the book was for, put that in the second chapter at the beginning. So... But we're going to study it, but it's really about the general overview of devotional service. So Rupa Goswami suggests that the person eligible for Krishna consciousness or devotional service can be classified by his particular taste. No one can take to Krishna consciousness without some previous connection to it. So it's interesting, you know, you see that sometimes people come to devotional service, right? And when they start, they already have such a taste for it at the very beginning. I was thinking maybe a good example is, you know, the person who was traveling with me, Bhakta Alex. Were you there when his father came?
Yeah, we flew with him.
What? He flew with the father. It's like a demigod family, huh? The father was like a demigod. From the beginning, he had taste. It's not that, and someone may come, and someone may be in Hare Krishna for many, many years. From his past life, the connection may not be as strong. So it really, and when it says, what it's talking about here, it's talking about coming to the point of uttama bhakti. And when you come to the point of uttama bhakti, it's when you actually understand that what bhakti is pure devotional service. It's actually surrendering to God, like Virabhadra, and like Kastuba, and like Jai, and like Ananta, and Achyuta, and the people we know. It's coming to that or appreciating that. Otherwise, people can come to the temple and see the deities and fine. They can make an offering. But This is the eligibility, and what's the eligibility? It's a taste. And the taste generally comes from a previous connection. And people come at different levels. But your advancement is your taste, your attraction. In fact, it says in bhakti that your level of advancement is exactly commensurate with your desire to hear about Krishna and your desire to chant about Krishna. That's your advancement. So anyone who's coming to this class, it's a very good sign. It means there's an attraction to hear. There's an attraction to get further. And, you know, and it's not exactly like that, too. You know, Krishna has a way of dealing with people that he has his time plan, but at least according to the tradition. But it's your taste. And generally, it's some previous connection. But then we discussed that in the beginning of the Waves Devotion, but well, how do you start if no one comes without a previous connection? So we're talking no one really comes to a level of commitment without previous connection. Like I'm just saying, I visit my mother in New Jersey. Some of you have seen, 94 years old. You know, she's not coming to the point of uttama bhakti. You know, that devotional service, you know, I should, you know, surrender to Krishna, or I should adopt some kind of sadhana, or I should go to the temple regularly. You know, I should associate with devotees. You know, she's thinking about her first great-grandchild that's being born and whatever, so many things. What's her objective is the family, is the absolute thing and thing. But her son is a devotee. And she loves her son, and she tries to do so much service for me, and she speaks so highly about them. So that's starting. So it starts, and that's called agata sukriti. Agata means without knowing, you get some benefit. But by that, or someone goes by Union Square and they hear the holy name in Union Square, or just people. I saw the karate class was here. And I thought, how nice. You know, they're coming into the bhakti center and, you know, they're not confronting like a conversion experience. There's no one waiting at the door. You know. And they're coming in and out. But what's happening? Adau Shraddha, they're getting appreciation. Oh, they're nice, the devotees. It may begin just like that. They're nice. So according to this tradition, maybe it starts like that. But to really come and have some conception, I may be here, but this is my goal. I want love of God in my heart, and I'm going to move towards that, and I'm interested in that. So this is what Prabhupada is actually talking about here. And in it, and this is at the end of the first wave, Prabhupada talks about munis. And what munis are, they're logicians. And what the logicians are is you're not a good muni or logician unless you defeat one. You can't say, I'm following the guru parampara. No, you have to get your own idea and your new idea. So Prabhupada said, that's not the way you come to Krishna consciousness, just by argument and logic. It's by taste. It's by your taste. And when I gave that seminar in Yoga Maya, I'll give you a little advertisement. On Sunday the 26th, we're going to have our second Sadhu Sunday at Yoga Maya, and it's a kirtan and a general talk, and also there's a full kind of a feast, prasadam, so it's kind of very intimate. But when I gave the lecture on Can God Be Blue, a study of Krishna, when I gave that talk, I really studied this concept of what makes someone believe in God. And basically, it's an experience that they have. And I even read that certain Christians, they have this concept, and I really like it, that with, and I heard this also by some Sanskrit scholars, there's almost a mechanism in the mind, it's like a sense, which is called faith, by which you experience God. You know, and then to keep that sense open, then there's reasonability, there's arguments, there's authority of philosophy and teachings, etc. But it's a certain experience that one has. And that's basically the way people come. And what will happen is the experience that they have will be based on a certain tradition that's contained in sacred texts, which they apply to their life, just like we're discussing the nectar of devotion here. And then they'll get a faith in that scriptures, those sacred texts. And they'll develop a taste for the instructions and for the teachings and the application in their life. And then their faith will increase more and more and more. The next one, Rati? But he said, but even if there's no continuity, if only chance, by chance, a person takes interest in a pure devotee's instructions, he can be accepted and advanced in devotional service. So generally, no one comes without a previous connection to it. But we don't think that way. Oh, I had a previous connection, and I'm starting at a... No, we always feel that the teachers that we meet in this life that enthuse our hearts with devotion, and anyway, even if we have something from the previous life, we're not going to go any further unless we get sadhu sangha. We get the association of people who've practiced the tradition. I always tell this story. I have this Puri Yatra, and every year, this man comes, he's anywhere between 85 and 95. But he's definitely over 85. And he's probably the foremost authority on Gaudiya Vaishnavism in the world. He has a PhD and a D-Lit. He's an amazing person. And he's a Sangeetacharya. Bryn remembers when he sung without a microphone, it was like amazing. And there was a bunch of Sanskrit scholars that come to my Puri Yatra from the Sanskrit school in Vrindavan. And he knew they were in the audience, so he said, who is Shastra Gya? Who knows the Shastra? Who knows the sacred texts? And then he said, they didn't answer, and he said, one who practices. But even if there's no continuity, anyway, for persons who have a natural taste for understanding books, it's easier than those who are simply accustomed to mental speculation and argumentative processes. You're not going to come to the truth just, but you'll actually have faith by the experience you get from meeting people who exemplify devotional service and by the teachings they give, which are all based on Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, etc. And then you'll get faith. It's like going to a doctor. When you go to a doctor, you know, he has a degree, okay, I'll try him. You talk with him, he sounds reasonable. And then when you develop a relationship and you start to get physical health, then he becomes a medical authority. And then we trust what he says and we trust the tradition he has. If it's Ayurveda, then we trust the Ayurvedic books. This is the medical. If it's Western science, we trust like this. So it's this taste. You know what I think today? Should I take a 10-minute break? Is that okay? But I'm starting exactly at 4:30. I didn't do this before, but I think I finished a section, and now I think I'll be able to plow through the next section. So just take a break, but exactly at 4:30, I am going to begin again, okay? and go for an hour. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Okay, so I'll begin by reading. I think that was very nice just to hear Srila Prabhupada's direct words. So now Prabhupada is actually starting the second wave, which is sadhana bhakti. And he says, now Srila Rupa Goswami proposes to describe devotional service in practice. That may be the fourth, end of the fourth paragraph. Practice means employing our senses in some particular type of work. Rati, the next one, okay? Therefore, devotional service in practice means utilizing our different sensory organs in service to Krishna. Some of the senses are meant for acquiring knowledge, and some are meant for executing the conclusions of our thinking, feeling, and willing. So practice means employing both the mind and senses in practical devotional service. This practice is not for developing something artificial. For example, a child learns or practices to walk. This walking is not unnatural. The walking capacity is there originally in the child, and simply by a little practice, he walks very nicely. Similarly, devotional service to the Supreme Lord is the natural instinct of every living entity. Even uncivilized men like the Aborigines offer their respectful obeisances to something wonderfully exhibited by nature's law, and they appreciate that behind some wonderful exhibition or action, there is something supreme. So this consciousness, though lying dormant in those who are materially contaminated, is found in every living entity. And when purified, this is called Krishna consciousness. So, the actual chapter, the second wave, actually began with there are these three categories of devotional service. There's sadhana bhakti, devotional service in practice, bhava bhakti, devotional service in ecstasy, and prema bhakti, and full love of Godhead. And then Rupa Goswami says, now I will discuss sadhana bhakti, devotional service in practice. And what Rupa Goswami does, and what he's so expert at, the previous one, is he gives definitions, right? So he says what sadhana is. He's defining what sadhana is. It's it's executed by the senses. That's kriti. Sadhana is executed by the senses. It's done by which the bhava comes. So this is what it is. It's every practice has a goal. You can't have a practice without a goal. So the practice of devotional service, the goal is this bhava. That's the goal. I see there's just so many things you can explain. Really, there are only two divisions. Really, there are only two divisions of bhakti. There's sadhana. There's practice. And there's sadhya. There's the goal. But Rupa Goswami says, no, there are three. There's bhava and prema. And the reason he says this is because bhava can't be a sadhana, because it's the goal. But I wrote this. I generally don't like to go back and read, but it was so interesting. See, bhava, it's going to be described later. It's not yet the full manifestation of prema. It's described like the sun and the sun rays. The sun rays are nothing but the sun, but the sun is so condensed. So it's the perfectional state, but you really can't yet say that it's the sadhya complete, and you can't say it's the sadhana, because this is the goal. It's something that really special happens at this point. Bhava. Something really happens. Something comes really into your heart. You begin to understand what your eternal relationship with Krishna is. But there's still some impurities. And the point that's so interesting, what are the impurities that are there? There's something, and this is a very important point. We'll discuss it later, called aparad. And what aparad means, aparad means, upa means to distance from radha or worship. It's offense. When you actually commit some offense in devotional service, when you criticize or envious towards a great soul or something, it's serious and it lingers on. So even it's almost a perfectional stage, but there's still some impurity. But basically, this is the goal. They're both the goal, but bhava. You should practice until you get bhava. And it's described that what happens is by the practice of devotional service, as you become more and more purified and go through the various steps, stages of devotional service, you come to a stage where your desire to serve, and to love God, and to dedicate your life is such a powerful voice in your heart. Now again, that doesn't mean okay. I asked her to do it, but she got enough. Picture. That's good. You'll do. Okay. That you come to a point where bhakti is like a voice in your heart, and your advancement is measured by how loud that voice is. You really, I want to serve, and the other voice is me, and that voice of service becomes so loud that it actually attracts God's energy of love. And that's what that's describing, bhava. And it comes to your consciousness. And when it comes to your consciousness, that desire to serve, and then this energy comes, it's described like an iron rod in fire. The iron rod becomes heat and light. So your mind becomes love like that. And it's an energy of God that comes. And so that's the goal. And there's certain ways to, by which love of Godhead comes, which is executed by the senses. Sadhana is execution of the senses. Oh, the definition is the practice executed with the senses that bring on bhava or love of Godhead. And what's going to be interesting, the class after next, we're going to just start discussing all the different practices and how you can engage the mind, the senses, and work. Therefore, Prabhupada called it the handbook of Krishna consciousness in that way. And then it says, that Prabhupada wrote, when transcendental devotional service by which love is attained, is executed by the senses, this is called sadhana bhakti. And then it says, nitya siddhasya bhavasya, that and it says that by which bhava is produced, nitya siddhasya bhavaya, it is eternal. And that's why Prabhupada says it's not like a practice where you don't know a language and then someone feeds you all the words and then you get a language. But it's something that's always there. That's called nitya siddhasya. This is always there. And therefore, the example that was given was so good. It's like the child, the walking capacity. When a child, what does a child do? It's somehow that walking capacity is in the child. So how does it come out? He tries to walk. So how do you get that love of Godhead? You try to love Godhead. It's like it's a perfect analogy. The walking capacity, there's certain things. How Prabhupada said, there are certain prescribed methods for employing our senses and mind in such a way that our dormant consciousness for loving Krishna will be invoked as much as the child with a little practice can begin to walk. One who has no basic walking capacity cannot walk by practice. Similarly, Krishna consciousness cannot be arrived by practice. Actually, there's no such practice. But when we wish to develop our innate capacity for devotional service, there are certain processes by which our accepting and executing will cause that dormant capacity to awaken in the heart. So basically what will happen is by these different practices, then the desire to serve will just keep on manifesting more and more and more and more. And when it comes to a certain level, then God will trust you with his internal potency. His loving energy will also come to your heart. So we have an eternal relationship with Krishna. And it just awakens by this practice. And nitya siddhasya bhavasya. It's always there. It's always there that it's an energy of God and it's always a nature in our heart. It's kind of like the energy of God is the water, the seed is our heart. So we have a seed of a particular type of flower in our heart. But at a particular time, bhava means when God's loving, watering energy enters into the heart. And then the bhava comes. So nitya siddhasya. Okay, let's go on. Ruti? Okay, we read this before. And Prabhupada gives another example of whether you like psychiatrists or not, this is the analogy. There's a healthy state of mind. And then someone is in an unhealthy state of mind. So what the psychiatrist is trying to do What the psychiatrist is trying to do is give some practices, not to create something else, but to bring someone to actually who they normally are. You know, they may be, let's say someone just forgot his identity completely, but they are the son of such and such. They have a particular nature, et cetera, like this. And so then the psychiatrist, he doesn't try to give them something else that they don't have. He tries to somehow bring them to the normal condition. A nice analogy that was given in a book called Jiva Dharma that I really like is it described that sometimes water becomes ice and it loses its swabhav of liquidity. But the liquidity is a very natural thing. So you put certain conditions and the ice melts and it comes back to water. So in the same way, we have a liquidity, a loving nature that's somehow been covered and we've become like ice. And bhava actually means when we get to the stage of bhava, it's when the heart becomes very soft. Very soft. Yes.
In connection to this and chapter two,
yeah.
When we get to the point of nishtha adhikari.
Of what?
Nishtha.
Yeah, fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we're engaged in pure devotional service, yeah. So the beginning stages of it, are we what we're tapping into in relation to Krishna is his Lavini Shakti?
Well, when we say Krishnanu Shilanam, that bhakti means activities that follow Krishna, that anu following Krishna means there is a reciprocation from Krishna and there is an energy that enters into our heart. But the stage of bhava, this is technical, but we'll study it later if people like those things. But the stage of bhava technically means is that at a particular time in one's devotion when he's really advancing and then Krishna's Ladini Samvit Shakti. It's actually technical. But he has a cognitive potency and he has a pleasure potency. And the combination, the cognitive potency lets you know who you are in relationship with Krishna, and the pleasure potency gives you that feeling of love in relationship to Krishna. And that enters at bhava. That's why also it says nitya siddhasya bhavasya. It's eternally existing. Because it's eternally existing because it's in our heart, but it's also eternally existing because that bhava is actually an energy of God that comes to our hearts. In other words, we should look at it this. What we ultimately are from a cosmic standpoint, what we ultimately are, we're particles of consciousness of the Supreme Consciousness. And we're meant for rasa in the Upanishads. I forgot how you pronounce it. Do you know that? Tattatriya. There's one Upanishads. It mentions Tattatriya, yeah. Rasa Vaisaha. The ultimate reality is overwhelming love. And we're meant to participate in that. So what our hearts are is actually a receptacle of that love. And when we serve and we become anyabhilashitash, we become free from other desires, and we want that, and we become purified, and we work through all our desires in this life. Maybe, you know, we actually come to that point, then God trusts us with that energy. We're meant to be receptacles. And that energy is Ladini, Samvit. This potency comes, and we know who we are in relationship to God, and we feel it very intensely. And that's the pleasure of God. God's pleasure potency is called Ladini Shakti in this tradition, and the essence of it is Krishna Prema, or love of Godhead. There's no difference between pleasure and love, and there's an existential love. And yes, because
I'm not sure if this is related.
Okay, to yeah.
When it's expressed, it's expressed in that verse where it's saying these shaktis come.
Yeah.
Then it sounds almost like it's saying, well, here it's saying that we already have it, it's uncovered. That sounds almost like you need to get something from outside.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's
what you're saying. Totally.
What I'm saying is it both. It's like a seed needs water. So the full flower is in the seed, but it needs something else to. So what it Yeah, so what it needs is this energy of God that comes into our heart. I mean, I studied this and I'm trying to reconcile those two points, that we have an eternal relationship with God, but there's always a description that at this higher stage, some deep energy comes into our heart. Okay? Anyway, it's a simple analogy. As a man's mental disease is cured, and so this sadhana bhakti cures the conditioned soul of his madness. This is from a verse in the Bhagavatam, and it calls the conditioned soul mad because we're suffering, and how we try to cure the suffering is by the same thing that caused the suffering. So it says, I think the verse is Parabhavas Tabat Abhotaja. We're mad because what's caused our suffering is this selfishness and this not wanting to be a devotee. And then when we get an anxiety, then what do we try to do? We try to cure our suffering with the exact same thing that caused it. So that's why, this is not in the Nectar of Devotion, but Prabhupada in his own commentary added this. Okay, that's good. It's also on that website, we have the whole thing listed too. Okay, next. Now, this is the essence of this sadhana bhakti. My dear king, one has to fix the mind of Krishna by any way. And this is a story in the beginning of the seventh canto. And Sukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Prickett, he's a king that's about to die. Let's see if I can sit for a few minutes. Oh. No. I'm comfortable this way. So this king is about to die, and he has 7 days left to live, and somehow or other, all the spiritual all-stars of the world come, and one person is put on the seat as the acharya, which is also a very interesting story because he's not really wearing clothes, but that's another story. But he's so pure. He's actually the son of Vyasadeva, the editor of the Vedas. He's completely detached from the world. He has all the signs of an exalted soul. And he's explaining this Bhagavatam. And then he explains in the sixth canto this story where it appears that God has favored the demigods over the demons. And then the question is God also in this business of Ichadvesha, hate and like, and duality? So then he's going to explain a story that even someone who Krishna kills gets liberation. He tells this story. There's this big sacrifice called the Rajasuya sacrifice, and who completes this sacrifice can become the emperor of the world. And they have to elect someone as the head of the sacrifice, and they elect Krishna. Now, Krishna is not a Brahmin. Krishna is not a warrior. Krishna is a cowherd boy. And in Hindi, it's called Gwala. Gowala. Gwala is the person that takes care of the cows. If you say it fast enough, it becomes Gwala, 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 Gwala. Becomes Gwala. So he's a Gwala, a cowherd boy. So there's someone who's so envious of Krishna. He's envious of Krishna since his birth. He's Krishna's enemy, and he's take birth many, many times, and he has this complete enviousness of Krishna that when he was 3 years old, 2 years old, he used to tell his mother, "Hey, Krishna, Krishna, bad man." He was so envious. So when Krishna was elected, he got up. When Krishna was elected, he got up and he started to curse Krishna. And this is a whole Bhagavatam story that could take the whole class, but he calls Krishna so many bad words, but the goddess Saraswati can take any bad word and make it good. So he calls Krishna the lowest of all men. And she divides it up in Sanskrit in a different way where it becomes Krishna's the man that makes everyone else go down. So now whatever he says, but then somehow or other, Krishna takes out his Sudarshana Chakra and what's happening is that when Marge Prickett asked this story, is Krishna partial? Then Sukadeva Goswami is telling this story to show that Krishna is not partial. Whatever he does is absolute. So the Sudarshana Chakra, his disc, and somehow cuts off the head of the Shishupala, and then everybody watches that his soul merges into Krishna and he achieves perfection. And then at that particular time, there's this verse where Narada, who's telling this story, or Narada, who's there, he's instructing Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira says, well, how did that happen? And he said, Yudhisthira, the gopis by their lusty desires, Kamsa by his fear, and other kings by envy, the Yadus by their familiar relationship with Krishna, you, the Pandus, by your great affection for Krishna, and we, the general devotees, by our devotional service, have obtained the mercy of Krishna. So the principle there, and this is from that verse, it says, my dear king, one has to fix the mind on Krishna by any way. So this is the principle of sadhana bhakti. But don't try to envy Krishna, because this is lila. When you envy Krishna, you don't think of Krishna. You just blinded by Krishna. But the idea, Kamsa, you know, he was cursed to die by the seventh son of Krishna's mother. And that was Krishna. And when Devaki was pregnant, he was just fear personified. He was just fear personified. He was just thinking constantly, 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 Krishna, 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 Krishna. And he also achieved liberation. So the idea is one has to fix the mind on Krishna. That's sadhana bhakti. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a great teacher in our tradition, said, every object, which is a vastu, has a shakti. Like a chair kind of has a shakti to make you sit, a cup, a plate to make you eat, whatever it is. Every object, and objects and acts of devotion have a bhakti shakti. So when you think of Krishna, it draws out that desire to serve. Krishna means all attractive. When you think of God and you actually meditate on Krishna and acts of devotion, and somehow or other that mind is fixed, it draws the devotion out of your heart. It's actually very natural because we have a natural relationship with God. It's just, I give the example, when a child is born and the child sees their mother, immediately there's love because there's sambandha, there's relationship. And Krishna is Krishna. It means God is all attractive. So it naturally brings it out. I had a small realization like this. And I was in Govardhan, and I had this nice couple that were helping me out and staying next to me. And very interesting fellow. His great-grandfather was the greatest opera singer in Russia, was the director of the Bolshoi Ballet. And he somehow or other, he doesn't have money, but he inherited what the Tsar gave his great-grandfather, which is a 7-room apartment in the most posh section of Moscow. And what does he do with it? He holds these incredible kirtans. I mean, right, Champak? They're amazing, right? We were there, incredible kirtans, one kirtanier after another. I mean, they are really good. So he tells me, I think I told you the story, that his sister's coming. And somehow his sister, who became a devotee, lives in Egypt. So, and she has this child and her husband there. And her husband teaches scuba diving or somehow, but they don't have any association with devotees, but somehow the young girl is like a devotee. She says, my sister's coming. Can she come out here for a day? I said, sure. And then it says, well, she's bringing her young daughter. And I went, oh, I mean, why is she bringing the daughter? I mean, she's coming to India for the first time. Now she's just going to watch her daughter all the time. Let her come first, experience in India, and bring that back. Why is she bringing the daughter? He says, no, you don't understand. This girl is very special. It's his niece. And I said, but I go, yeah, sure. So the girl comes in, and she's 7 years old, and she's wearing this sari. And she's a beautiful girl. She's a very beautiful girl, and she's so well-behaved. So I said, okay, let's go on Govardhan Parikram, you know. And by that time, I had this blister in my foot, so I had to wear some shoes. And we weren't going all around. We were just going to the next sadhu town called Govindakund. It's a 40-minute walk. So I said, today we'll just go to Govindakund. So I'm with my shoes, and the girl is walking barefoot, this young girl. I said, you don't have to walk barefoot. She says, no, I will go barefoot. I will also go barefoot. I said, well, then Maharaj is wearing shoes. Gonna make me feel bad? So we went, and I went, and for 1 hour, I explained the Govardhan Leela to her. And she was just listening so attentively, right, with her blonde hair and it's braided. Champak knows her, she's seen. So beautiful, this girl. And then what happened is the mother said, you know, we're going to Vrindavan, and I heard that there's this special place you take people. Can you take us? Now, Kartik is the month I stay in Govardhan. I don't like to travel. You know, but I just thought she drew out such parental kind of feelings because she was just so beautiful. Not only beautiful, but just well-behaved and Krishna conscious. So I just thought, yes, this is a principle. And the principle is Krishna's all attractive. That's what God means. He's all attractive. So he's all beautiful, all intelligent, all wealth, all fame, all knowledge, and all love. So it draws you out of the heart. So that's the principle. To somehow or other fix your mind. And Prabhupada in the purport, I'll describe that later. So that's the basic principle of sadhana bhakti. You have to fix the mind. And then it says it's the duty of an acharya to find the ways and means for his disciple to fix his mind on Krishna. So an acharya is, especially someone like Prabhupada in individual relationships, you advance by fixing the mind on Krishna. And there's so many different ways to do it. And I was thinking of Prabhupada when the movement first started. What is he going to do? You know, the people were hippies, so he couldn't really keep them out in the world and expect them to be Krishna conscious. So he brought everyone. You had to come into the temples. Then what is he going to do? He has to engage them. And what does it mean? They're very passionate. So Prabhupada engaged ways to engage all these people, and it worked. People advanced. In his mission and distributing books and doing so many things, people became engaged in devotional service. And that's the principle. Somehow, I know my own anxiety. I'm here in the Bhakti Center, and so many people are coming to Krishna consciousness. And I spoke to Virabhadra and Anant, and we have to make a list of all the people. And, you know, who are they connected to as mentors to help them move forward? If they want service, you know, how can they be engaged if they want service? What kind of education do they require? But people need some type of service, some way to engage the mind. And not only that, I go to kirtan on Thursday, or I go this day, or I do this practice, something to engage people's mind. I remember my good friend Burijan Prabhu, who's almost like a mentor. He's so wise, and he's the founder of practically all the education, this kind of program. He's the one that started them in Vrindavan years ago, Vrindavan Institute with Higher Education. And I remember at a particular time when you meet him, it's never frivolous. He always asked a question that gets you to think. So when he asked, when he comes in, he would ask people, what is your taste in Krishna consciousness? And different people would say something. He said, my taste is Vrindavan. You know, my taste, Ananta, you ask Ananta, what's your taste? It's kirtan. You know, somebody else, it may be teaching. And he said, that taste is your door to the spiritual world. This is sadhana bhakti. So this is what the teacher does. Okay, next. And there are two types of sadhana bhakti, Vaidhi bhakti and Raganuga bhakti. And this Raganuga sadhana bhakti, we're going to discuss later. It's in chapter 15 and 16. But initially, Prabhupada just wants to describe it in a simple way. It's a little bit more detailed than that. Raganuga bhakti and Vaidhi. Vaidhi bhakti means that your impetus to serve is basically your understanding. I know that this is proper because it is in the Shastra. And that impels your service. And it's not... I remember one time with Kasturba's guru, we were talking about, there was one, in this one Gaudiya Math, there was one person that became like a big acharya. But there was another person who was more quiet, but wasn't like that prominent as this other person. And he said, you know, hey, he's no slouch. You know, he's substantial. So Vaidhi Bhakti is very, very substantial. It's what we're doing here. You know, by understanding and hearing, that you'll become inspired. Yes, I should do this, right? I should practice this because this is, I have faith in these sacred texts, in this tradition, and by following them, I'll get love of Godhead. And Raganuga Bhakti means when the impetus is purely your attachment. Now, this is going to be described later on, but real bhakti is Rag Bhakti. It's when you're doing something out of love and attachment. But Vaidhi Bhakti is also love. It's not that it's not love. Because I love Krishna, you know, I do what pleases Krishna, and I understand this thing. So basically, this is the definition that's given. I actually feel more comfortable looking at it myself than turning around. When there is no attachment and no spontaneous loving service to the Lord, and one is engaged in the service to the Lord simply out of obedience to the order of the spiritual master or in pursuance of the scriptures, such obligatory service is called Vaidhi Bhakti. And basically, if you want to fix your mind on Krishna, it takes time to develop spontaneous love. And if artificially you say, I'm just going to do it spontaneously and follow my heart, you won't chant, you won't read, you won't come to programs, you won't do anything. You'll follow your heart. So it's described that even in our path, that, you discipline yourself, you regulate yourself. And then as you develop more and more spontaneity, then your impetus for service becomes less your obligation and duty and more your heart. And Prabhupada describes that maybe initially you have to go to the Mangal Arati, but then after a while you're running to the Mangal Arati, you want to dress the deities, you want to do things spontaneously. So really, it's a kind of faith. It's kind of almost something like this. And when we get to the 15th chapter, this is going to be discussed. This is a very simplistic discussion of it, and that's how Prabhupada is discussing it at this time. So I don't really want to go too further. But really, it means that, let's say you're chanting, you make an obligation, I want to be initiated, I'm chanting 16 rounds, right? So then you chant, And you feel that the benefit comes when you pull down the last bead. You know, you have faith in the vaidhi or the rule. Right? And real bhakti is when you have faith and absorption in the activity that you're doing. And that takes time, and that we develop gradually. But vaidhi is also, and it's not vaidhi or raganuga, it's a thing that progresses and moves as you advance in devotional service. You know, you become more spontaneous, but you don't let go of the duties and obligations that one has. And when you do that, you generally wind up doing very little in any practice or any path, right? It's like someone, if you're with yoga, right? Wow, I feel great today. Today I don't feel so good. No, I feel great. No, today I don't feel so good. And you'll wind up not feeling so good more days than you feel great. So there has to be some obligation and duty in any path. Okay, that's the definition of vaidhi bhakti. Let's go on. And this is an example of it from the Srimad Bhagavatam. My king, if you want to be fearless in meeting your death next week, you must immediately begin the process of hearing and chanting. So that Maharaj Prickett, who is dying, he asked Sukadeva Goswami, what is the duty of a man who's about to die? What should he not do? And he said, if you want to become fearless in meeting your death, and that's a big point, because the worst fear is the fear of death. And that experience, when you experience death without a depth of realization, the impression is so powerful that it's one of the main samskaras that you carry to your next life. And that's why in the Yoga Sutras it explains that even a child is afraid of death even though he hasn't experienced it before. Why? Because that experience of losing everything that you're attached to at once, not the pain. A great sadhu in Vrindavan, a good friend of mine, a scholar, said, the pain of death is not it's not the physical pain. Generally, you go to coma or people could give you drugs. It's the fear, I lose all my attachments. But that experience is so strong. So you want to be fearless, then you must begin the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna. So that's vaidhi bhakti. Why? Because the motive is not your attachment, but it's to become free from fear. So that's the example that's given of vaidhi bhakti. And I should just say also, because I'm going quick now because I don't have time to do everything I'm inspired by. But when it said the acharya should find the ways and means, I think it's important what Prabhupada, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us the authorized program for this purpose, fixing the mind, centered around the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. This chanting has so much power that it immediately attaches one to Krishna. That is the beginning of sadhana bhakti. Somehow or other, one has to fix his mind. The best process is the kirtan for absorbing your mind. I can give a whole class on that, but then we don't cover anything else. So let's go next. And then always remember Krishna and never forget him. All the rules and prohibitions mentioned in the Shastra are servants of these two principles. So the whole purpose of any rule is to remember Krishna and that means not to forget Krishna. So it's going to discuss a little bit about Vanashram. I don't think I'm going to discuss it. It means there's social, there's occupational things. One is a teacher or an administrator, or a mercantile class, or labor class, or there's ashrams. One is a celibate monk, one is married, one is retired, one is completely renounced. The whole purpose of them is to remember Krishna. And if the remembrance of Krishna is not there, then they become useless. It's not that the rules and regulations and social obligations are not important, but they're important because they help you remember Krishna. And when they don't, then they have no value. Because this is the main rule of spiritual life, to somehow focus the mind on Krishna. Go on. This regulative principle is applicable to all vana and ashrams, the caste and occupation of life. This is the principle. It's applicable. This is why one gets married, to remember Krishna. This is why one will remain a monk, to remember Krishna. If you're a monk and you're so disturbed that you're not remembering Krishna, then get married. It's not that I'm a brahmachari. Then no, if it's not helping you remember Krishna, then and be married. And then at the end of life, you're 75, then okay, this is, you know, now I'm becoming more renounced. So we take vanaprastha, because that helps us remember Krishna. So that's the principle. And this perfection of work will be tested by how far the Lord is satisfied. And then Prabhupada quotes this verse, and it's a very powerful verse. Dharma svanushtita. Svanushtita means perfectly you execute your dharma. But viviksena katasya nopadiye yinti ritim. If it doesn't give rati, if it doesn't give a taste or a flavor for Krishna, then shrama eva hi kevalam. Shrama means useless. And this is great. Eva means only. He means certainly. Kevala means only. It's pretty much emphasized. It's only, certainly, only useless if it doesn't lead to this remembrance of Krishna. So this is the basic principle of any spiritual practice that it helps you remember Krishna. Let's go on. And conclusion, any activity sanctioned in the revealed scriptures and aiming at the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are accepted by saintly teachers as the regulative principles of devotional service. If one regularly executes such service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead under the direction of bona fide spiritual master, then gradually he rises to the platform. So it's not that these rules and these regulations, that they're not important. And if you execute them, aiming at what pleases Krishna, then you gradually rise to the platform of love of Godhead. So, I mean, I can explain so much more on this, but I have kind of a sense of this wonderful meal I cooked, and then I gave rasgullas and sweet rice and burfi, and I can't give the soan papri because you're already full. So, basically, are there any questions?
How can we gauge the Lord's satisfaction with our service? Is this something that's scripturally described?
With our service?
Right. Three slides back, it said, if the Lord is pleased. So do we attain that knowledge through some experience, some kind of reciprocation that's esoteric or, you know, comes by some sign?
Well, you know, one thing that I do myself, because you always have so many choices that you have to do, to make sure that something is not born, you know, because you can do devotional service because if you're an institution, because it'll help you to get to the next position, or people will be impressed with it, or, you know, there's so many motives that can enter in, you know, to something. So how do you know it's satisfying Krishna, right? What I generally do is I consult other Vaishnavas to take it out of the realm of my own ego. And I remember one of the most important decisions of my spiritual life, I wanted to make sure that it was being done for the pleasure of Krishna, because I realized that from this service there would come so many benefits, actually. Even though it was a service, I realized from this service would become so many benefits. So I went to the most senior Vaishnava and I put it before them. And I said, do you think I should do this or not? And I was willing to accept what they said. So generally, that's the Krishnanu Shilanam. Our activities are connected to Krishna through the Guru Parampara, through teachers, through people who we trust, and we try to please, actually. That's why, that's one of the reasons in bhakti that we have gurus. Not the guru, we have one diksha guru, we can have many siksha gurus, that's going to come up, instructing teachers. But we trust people and we surrender that they represent Krishna's will. So how do we know that we're pleasing Krishna? Well, it has to be what he wants. Well, how do we know what he wants? It's what the sacred texts say. Well, how do we know what the sacred texts say? Well, find someone that knows the sacred text. And it's not a question of micromanaging the life. Sometimes a person would say, you're the one that has the information to make the decision. You know, because it's your life. The other thing is sincerity. Another thing I do when I want to know, is this going to please Krishna or what will please Krishna? I remember in Vrindavan, I would go into Prabhupada's samadhi, his tomb. And I would really pray that reveal to me what you want. Reveal to me what you want. And you know, when I would do that, the main reason often that we can't actually find what God's will is because we have certain attachments. So make the commitment. What do you want? I want to please you. You know, and generally what will happen is if you're in that mood, then there could be a lot of options. Because a lot of times the mental plane where we say, I should do this, or should I do this, or should I do this, it's from the platform of false ego. We're calculating, where will I get most out of it? And from the platform of false ego, if there's a hair more benefit for me one place, it becomes an excruciating decision. Should I do this or should I do this? Should I do this? Should I do this? Which gives more pleasure for me? So when you take that out, right, a lot of times decisions are easy to make. That's my personal experience. So you have to be connected. Krishnanu Shilanam. We can get connected to Krishna through the Guru Parampara, through the teachers that represent them, and by sincerity and detachment. Any other questions? Yes, Matthew.
Is it possible that we could spend quite a long time in this Vaini Bhakti without it ever developing into Raghavendra Bhakti? And does that mean that we're then barred from many perfections?
Okay. No, you see, there's another point here about Vaidhi Bhakti. It's not just a level of advancement, it's a proclivity. So this particular point is a little technical, but when I discuss the Raghunuga Bhakti in the 15th chapter, I'll explain it. If I explain it now in 5 minutes, it'll probably be misunderstood. But Vaidhi Bhakti can be very, very spontaneous. But what Prabhupada's talking about right here, right now, is just a question of what inspires you to do service, whether it's obligation or duty, or whether it's your attraction. But technically speaking, you see, and this you're not going to understand now, and don't even try, but I'll explain it. As long as you are attracted to the majestic aspect of God, right? And Krishna is not the majestic aspect of God, it's the intimate aspect of God. As long as you're attracted to the majestic aspect of God, which is beautiful, there'll always be a certain sense of obligation, and there'll always be a certain sense of duty, and there'll also always be a certain sense of fear in pure love of Godhead. So technically speaking, Vaidhi Bhakti can go right up to Vaikuntha. And Raghunuga Bhakti means when you have the proclivity to worship Krishna as a friend. It's because there's no obligation or duty. As soon as there's superiority, there's obligation or duty. So really, in our line, it's really not pure Vaidhi Bhakti ever. Even if we follow the rules and regulations, our aspirations are to have a personal relationship with Krishna. So it's actually called Ajata Ruchi Raghunuga Bhakti. It's called Ajata Ruchi before you really have that taste, Raghunuga Bhakti. So what that means is our goal is this spontaneous love, if that's your attraction, but we stay under the rules to get it. But we cultivate it in particular ways by meditating on Krishna, by worshiping the deities of Radha and Krishna, by chanting the holy name. We cultivate that spontaneous devotion, but keep ourselves under rules. Now, If you don't understand it, stay tuned. Chapter 15 and 16. Now, what I'd like to do now, just for 15 minutes, I have a sense of people are full. So I don't really feel I should go too much more into it. I'll do what I do in every class. We'll just do it for 5 or 10 minutes. Just free writing. What inspired you? What you remember most? All it means is you don't let the pen stop. And even if you say, I don't remember, just keep on writing that. But generally what I see is once you get the pen moving, then you remember, you start remembering what inspired you about the class, what you remember. Champak, just write. Don't need to look at notes. Okay? Just anything you remember. Just start the pen moving. It's only for yourself. Even if you don't share it, anything you remember from the class, what inspired you, what you remember, and we'll do this for 5 minutes. Just keep the pen moving. That's the idea. And this exercise is good because even if you don't say anything, you'll see once the pen moves, it's connected to the brain. Okay, stop. And underline one thing that you wrote that you liked. Just underline one thing. Okay, we'll just go. It's 5:30. We'll just go 10 minutes more today. If you have to go, you have to go, but I appreciate you could stay. Okay, then. Turn in groups of two. If you're alone, you can join a group of three and discuss. Okay? Three. Can everybody look up? Okay, good. Duality, hot and cold. It was cold and it was hot. So my main objective in the next class is regulating the temperature perfectly. So it was nice. I felt we were all on the same page and absorbing everything. So next week we'll do chapters 3 to 5. And I'm kind of really appreciating that people have kind of steady. People are trying to come. When they can come. It's not possible always to do every week, but we have that set up. So, but it's great. I always say I'm better live. So try to come every week. And thank you. We'll just see you all next week. Okay.